Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror.
Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meet Hook Jim here, the Wrestle Horror Podcast. With me, as always, is my co-host, Donnie Hoover. Donnie, what are you doing with Pennywise back there?
He hasn't moved yet, but like I said, the other night he did, and it kind of freaked me out. But I think my chair bumped him, and I didn't know it. So I just sat there, and I heard something move. I was like, what the hell? I was like, I turned around real quick.
So I kind of freaked myself. Has it fallen on you yet, Donnie?
Not yet. No, I got him. Okay. I got the frame, like, tucked under my – because this piece right here is a door. It's like a bang door from the Scaratorium haunted house, and I got it kind of tucked under so it don't fall over and hit me in the head. But I think I did bump it with my chair and he moved, and it did kind of freak me out for a second.
and joining us sometimes, because he's a slacker and he's on his own schedule, is Mr. John Orlando. John, it's been a while. Welcome back.
It has. Thank you. I'm busy putting out, NOW Nation Recaps with Michael Pagano. That's where I've been. Okay. And taking care of some other projects too. But it's good to be back. I appreciate it, guys.
And now that we've got Wrestle Horror back in force, we're going to introduce our special guest on this episode. He's a pro wrestler. He's a horror actor. I'm talking about Max Morrison. Max, how are you doing, my friend?
Guys, gentlemen, what is going on? Thank you for having me.
We're happy to have you on. Like I said, your background fits right in.
Absolutely.
Well, it's like you and me, Donnie, were chatting, I guess, like a day or two ago, and we were setting this up, man. It's like wrestling and horror. It's like peanut butter and jelly. It just goes right together, nice and smooth.
Yeah. Oh, I could definitely not agree more. It's... Like we were talking off air, it's just the way it is. There's so many similarities between the two industries that you go to a horror convention, what do you see? Pro wrestlers.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm.
So it's hand in hand. And, Max, like Donnie said, you're right up our alley because you do both. What did you start in first? Did you start in wrestling or did you start at acting?
That's kind of a funny question because, so before I did either of those, I was actually playing in a bunch of bands for like 15 years. I was a drummer in a bunch of professional cover bands and metal bands and stuff before I decided to get bit with the wrestling bug.
Nice.
But before that, I did a music video for a pal of mine. I ended up getting my first taste of like real acting. He had me go in there and do this thing where I played a part where I was some sleazeball in a bar hitting on his old lady. And that was my first taste of being on film. Nice. And then a few years later, I got into pro wrestling. I'm going on my sixth year doing it now. And then I got some cool opportunities. I did a spot for the band Iron Reagan from Richmond, Virginia. Those guys are super cool. Me and a bunch of other wrestlers from out my way back in Virginia, we got invited on there to do their video for Patronizer, and it was a big schmoz between the band and us, and we were all beating the crap out of each other, and that was a whole lot of fun.
Nice.
And then, like 2 years later, I got tagged with some people in the horror community, and that was when I made my entrance and started doing shorts, and I just had my first film release that I was a part of actually a couple weeks ago, and I'll show you right now. It's by Brad Twigg in Fuzzy Monkey Productions. It's called Death Board.
Nice.
And I've been promoting this thing. This is like schlocky, silly, grindhouse, old indie Ouija board movie with demon possession, lots of kills, lots of blood, naked chicks, everything you want. You know what I mean?
There you go. Everything you want in a good horror film.
I'm going to ask a quick question, Max, because you have the moniker Mad Max Morrison. Are you a fan of that film franchise? The Mad Max film franchise?
They're fun, but funny enough, man, that's not where the madness comes from.
Okay.
Yeah, because the madness, actually, I got deemed with the madness before I even got into pro wrestling, man. So my whole wrestling journey started long before I got into pro wrestling. As I was saying before, I got into I was into playing music, and I was playing a bunch of heavy metal bands, and just through years and years, I adopted the name Max through my journey. And then once I started playing drums for a prog metal band called Mad Hatter for out of Virginia Beach, and it had the two D's. And then from then on, people identified me in the band as Mad Max.
Okay.
So gotcha. Since like 2011, I've been going by Mad Max, and that's just stuck. So by 2014, when I got into pro wrestling, it was like, I need a name. Actually, I've already got one.
Well, so you can solved that problem real quick.
Yeah, exactly.
Real quick. It was a no-brainer, man. It came so easily. It was nice. Because I know a lot of people have a hard time coming up with them, and it's like, all right, cool. I'm already ready to go.
So where'd you get trained at?
I started off living in Virginia Beach because that's where I spent most of my time, most of my life, out in the 757 Southern Virginia. I trained at this place that was there for a good long while. It was called Southside Professional Wrestling. It was SPW, and it was out of this building right near one of the Navy bases. We were right down the street from the beach in the Naval base. And, of course, there was a Hooters right around the corner, so you know where we were going afterwards. but I spent about a year training there under Mark Anthony. He wrestled out there a whole bunch. And then I wrestled under Mark Anthony and Marty Reed. And sometimes I got trained because he was there as alumni coming as a special coach was J.J. Blake from Booker T's Reality Wrestling. Mm-hmm. So he helped kind of coach me along a little ways. And then after that got sold, there was a gym in Yorktown, probably about 45 minutes to an hour away. They got bought out. So they took over the program, and we ended up hiring out Damian Wayne from – he was originally from Newport News, but he lives out in Clarksville, Tennessee. He's a former NWA champion. He's traveled the road. He did all the – he did dark matches for all the big – for all the big companies. I think his latest claim to fame is he was AIWF world champion about a year or two ago and had like a year and a half reign. But he took me under his wing, took me on the road and got me started and pushed me on my journey and been kind of following his footsteps, you know, ever since.
Okay, cool. How was the training? Was it top at the beginning? Did they try to old school it or, you know, they kind of make it real physical and then, you know, lighten up some? Or how, you know, was it more, I guess you could say more new school, so to speak?
I think it was like a little mix of both. Okay. And I say that because, of course, Southside Virginia, we're still like right in that Southern Territory area. So there was like, we have a lot of like veteran heads out there that are all old school wrestlers, like Mid-Atlantic. So we had that influence in the school, but same time, Dustman was progressive enough to where he's had enough cats come through where it's like, okay, we can old school this a little bit, you know, but we're going to get you trained. But at the same time, we're going to be a little lenient, which was good and fine. So, I mean, in the beginning, because I started kind of late in life. I started pro wrestling when I was older. I started when I turned 30 years old. I literally graduated college, got me an electronics degree, and then 3 months later found myself in wrestling school. I really wish I didn't have to spend all the money I did on the college because I spent almost as much as in the friggin' wrestling school. So I was like, yeah. Go from one school to another. But it was kind of old school in the sense that they just had this bump and repeat, you know, learned all the basics, learned my fundamentals. And then luckily a bunch of the old veteran heads would come through and show us what's up. And then once I started training under Wayne, I had enough under my belt and a little bit of experience. So he started teaching me the psychology, the whys, the whats, the reasons, the means, why are you going to do this? And then started showing me the ropes on the red. So that's pretty much like a introspect of my training, how that went.
Now, are you still down south?
Fairly. I live out in Frederick, Maryland now. I've been up here about 2.5 years. Which has been cool because when I was living down there, I've been up to like Rhode Island all the way down to Georgia, but I was kind of sitting pretty right there in the North and South Virginia. I was over in lot of the Carolinas. But once I moved up here to Frederick, it put me kind of in a good central location because I'm right there at Pennsylvania. I got Delaware, I got Maryland, Virginia. So I've been kind of bopping around between West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Maryland for the most part.
Yeah. How's the wrestling been in your area with all the regulations and the COVID and all that?
Well, before COVID, it was doing fantastic. It was my book stayed solid constantly between film projects and doing that, man. I staying busy on the road, man, putting miles on that car. But once COVID hit, man, it scared the shit out of everybody because we didn't know what we were supposed to be doing. It's a physical thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I know down in, like, Virginia, they put a kibosh and everything for right now because they're looking at – from what I heard, there was, like, stupid rules. Like, if you're going to have a wrestling match, you got to be 10 feet away from your opponent. How the fuck are you supposed to wrestle 10 feet away from your opponent?
Really?
And you want to take my money and tell us that bullshit? Okay. Whatever, dude. I'll sit it out for a little while.
Yeah. That'd be a little tough to do.
Yeah. And I mean, we can rock, paper, scissors for the title, you know, that's fine. I mean, I'm a badass at Uno, dude. You ain't going to beat me. I'm taking your belt.
So Max, based on where you lived and where you grew up and things like that, I'm going to assume that you were a WCW fan.
Oh, big time. Very much.
Yay. Finally, somebody that appreciates WCW.
See, Max, it's like growing up in my house, Saturday night was like the weekly thing. That's what we did. Because every night, TBS, or every week, TBS, 6:05 yeah. Eastern, we were mm-hmm. sitting down. Mm-hmm. I like, they had the spinning ring. There was studio style. That was the best. Yeah. And then, of course, Nitro comes along. But I was a fan of the WWF, too. But the thing I liked about the WWF is they had, like, rich characters. It's like you had the athleticism and all the old school of the WCW, but you had, like, I mean, it was hokey, but you had all the characters and super creative stuff over here at WWF. So it was like kind of best of both worlds. Right. But then I became a big ECW head when that started coming around. Cause that was also around the same time I learned about Japanese wrestling too. I think it might've been like 97 or 98. I met a kid in my school on the bus who taught me about like independent wrestling and the likes of like Christopher Daniels. That was when like Fallen Angel had first started making his way in the scene, taught me about Hayabusa. So I started watching a bunch of FMW, and I started buying all those tapes when I saw those. Started buying all the ECW stuff, and I saw how they were jumping back and forth. Then, like, one of my big guys back then was Mike Awesome, because I've never seen a guy that big doing all the athletic stuff he did flying around. And that dude was just a monster. So, yeah, so I gravitated towards that. And definitely gravitate towards like the old school wrestling because just they were almost like real life superheroes to me. So I was like, dude, these guys are incredible. that was the total appeal.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I asked that is because on most of our shows, everybody's strictly a WWE fan. And it's like, no, I grew up in Florida watching WCW. So, you know. So I'm glad that there's somebody out there that appreciates it.
Well, what's been really fortunate to me is just through my journey, I've met a lot of cats, like a bunch of vets that came from WCW and got to pick their brains, sit in the locker room, and hang out with them. So, I mean, that right there on top of like watching it as a kid and then being around them to actually get the inside's been real neat. I know one of the guys that had a real good hand in my development is the Platinum Icon. He's the guy from My Way. He lives in Florida now, but the Platinum Icon, Phil Brown, he was trained at the power plant back in 2000. He was ready to make that jump before they shut that place down. But he comes around the way and gave all us young cats, you know, all the tools we need from what he learned from being out there. That, and I talked to the original Mad Max. There was another Mad Max, 2Ds, 2Xs before me. He's a guy in Raleigh, North Carolina. His name is Chuck Coates. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he used to wrestle on Worldwide back in the early 90s. He tagged with he actually tagged with Jim Roma against Haku and Andre back in 88.
Okay.
So I've been picked. So I got an influence from him and Phil, and they've been teaching me all the old school stuff.
That's great. I appreciate old school wrestling.
There's so much to it, because the thing that lacks now in new age wrestling is, because everybody has such a short attention span, you want something that's going to grab your attention. You want the instant gratification. That's why everybody's being real spotty and whatnot. But the thing that was real nice and juicy about old school wrestling is the fact that you had to use your brain to put the things together. There was a lot of subtle, or it was in your face, where you could tell a story, and all you had to do, you could cut a promo just by changing the look in your face. You didn't even really have to say much, but you had to grab that crowd and make them believe every damn feeling and emotion and word you said, and you'd have them hanging on by a thread. That was the shit I love about old school wrestling. It's just the fact of working and just making people believe. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you Besides see Mike- the hate in my face?
I was going to say, besides Mike Awesome, who were some of your other favorites, Max?
Well, when I was a young kid and I first got started, of course, I gravitated towards all the painted guys, because I was a big comic book kid growing up. So I was watching Sting and Road Warriors, and I was loving those dudes. And then as I got older, I started falling into like Mike Awesome, the Mick Foley's. Like Cactus Jack is one of my favorites, and I feel like I've kind of adopted a lot from his style, especially being a brawler type wrestler myself. And as I've gotten older and further in my journey, I started looking towards like other guys. Like I really enjoy watching Buzz Sawyer. I definitely love watching Bruiser Brody. I take a lot from him. I definitely like, let me try to think of who else I was falling into was, I definitely love Bigelow. Oh, here was the big thing. And he was probably one of the coolest people I've met in the business. So I think it was like 2016, 2017, went to WrestleCade in North Carolina, met Shane Douglas, the franchise, for the first time.
Right.
He was my champion. Outside of Shawn Michaels, he was my champion, because I personally was never a Four Horsemen fan. I respect Ric Flair, but I don't care for him. But I was always a Shane Douglas guy. He always had the swagger, the bravado. He just had the balls to say whatever the hell he wanted. And I admired the shit out of it, so he became my champion.
I can understand that.
I definitely love brash personalities. It just, I don't know, man. It's just, that's where my energy goes. So I look to the predecessors like, so how do I rein this in? How do I do that?
So my question that I had, to jot down here, since you love horror and you love wrestling, who is the best horror wrestling character? Because we've had tons of them. Throughout the history of wrestling, we've had tons of them. Who do you think's the best?
Man, that's a loaded question, because you know it all depends on your flavor. I know I'm going to bring that up a lot of times this interview, man, but it's really what you got a taste for. Because I know, God, what was his name? Because I know Fiend is the big guy right now.
Sure.
Fiend's the big guy. I really love his stuff because he's got that Tom Savini mask. Like, he's done a really good job with his presentation. And then he's got the I'm a break your neck deal. Yeah. He's out there snapping dudes' necks, man. That's terrifying. I don't want my neck broken. But I know, as far as like old school cats, there's I was a big fan of Super Leather, because he was straight up Leatherface from Japan back in like the early 90s. Because I was watching him on a bunch of old FMW. The fact he was aping Leatherface Direct, I was like, all right, this is cool. But I definitely also liked Waylon Mercy. I thought Waylon was, because he was so what's his face from Cape Fear, and you believed it in his promo, because he would just terrify the shit out of you. He would say everything he intended on doing, then he'd go out there and do it, and he'd stalk you. He wasn't coming direct. He just stalked the shit out of you.
And like, I think the delivery was what was so disturbing. You know, that lives are going to change in the hands of Waylon Mercy. Like, it was very monotone and very, very frightening to just, it would be, it, I don't think it would have the same effect if he yelled, you know what I mean? Yelled and screamed and everything. Just the monotone delivery scared the crap out of you.
Oh yeah. It wouldn't have been him at all if he started like yelling and carrying on. Cause that was the whole thing. He would draw you in. Cause like one of the things Jake Roberts used to do back in days, he used to talk low because he'd have to make the audience pay attention.
Yeah.
To what he's saying, because he's saying it so low, you got to see what's up. And then he got his point across. Same with him, because as even in horror movies, a lot of the killers don't go screaming. They're going to be like, when they got you tied up to the chair, wherever it is, I'm going to tell you my plan. Here's what I plan on doing. And I'm going to tear you from limb to limb. And I know you can see the look in my eyes. So you believe I can do this. So you better beware. It's that kind of thing where you just look in the dude's eyes and believe that he's going to murder and torture you. And that was the thing Waylon brought to the table. It's just like, yo, he came straight off the screen. Can somebody bring him back to Blockbuster, please? I think he's late.
Well, you overlooked The Undertaker. Obviously, The Undertaker's got to be on there.
He goes without saying, man. Undertaker's okay. Timeless. That's the way my brain works, dude. He's one of those timeless characters where I feel I don't need to say him.
Okay. But
he is, as far as horror characters, he is the best of all time, dude. He is the most successful, and he was terrifying as shit. Mm-hmm. Especially when he was in ministry, when he was running as the cult leader taker, because he was doing some gnarly stuff. Yeah, man.
One wrestling talk I've already appreciated. He's mentioned Waylon Mercy and Buzz Sawyer, and I've heard those names, which I'm a Buzz Sawyer fan myself. I don't know if I've even ever met another Buzz Sawyer fan. But then he threw Waylon Mercy at us, and I was like, oh, hell yeah. So you probably will never hear these names again on our podcast, so you just enjoy them while you can.
That's a challenge. I'm going to try to fit them in all the time now. That's it. That's why we try to fit them in all the time now.
We'll be talking about something random. It was like Waylon Mercy.
glad I could spice it up kind of nice for you guys.
Yeah, I've talked to many people, and they're like, who do you like? And I like, which I like the Horsemen, the old school originals. I'm like, I like the Horsemen. I like Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer, Bruiser Brody, Abdullah the Butcher, you know, Bam Bam Bigelow. And like I say, Buzz Sawyer, and you can just, people kind of look like, who or what?
Dude, the guy knew how to work, man. He knew how to get heat. He went out there and straight didn't give a fuck.
Yeah, he was crazy.
Man, some of those clips, you watch him taking bumps. You know, there was one clip with, I think it was from the Crockett Cup, with Coco Beware giving him a drop kick. The way Sawyer sold that, you thought he got shot with a gun the way he sold it. But, man, oh, man, he just no regard for his own safety.
Yep. Another old school name I've been doing a lot of studying on over the last year, man, is I've been getting into Dick Slater matches.
Oh, yeah.
I do like some Dick Slater, man. Like I was watching some of his stuff from the 70s when he was babyfacing it, and then I watched a bunch of his stuff when he was in, like, early WCW and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. That's a name that brings me back. I've been watching the NWA since I was 12, and I'm going to go ahead and tell you that I'm 55. So that gives you a
come on, you don't look a day over 35. Don't bullshit me.
You don't look a day over 54, Jim. Come on.
See, I was nice. I was gonna call you out, Jim, when you go, I'm a fan of WCW. I was gonna say, you mean championship wrestling from Florida.
Oh,
see, I wasn't gonna rat you out.
Yes. Yes. Not the one that the WWE did.
No.
the NWA one. Yeah.
Real funny story talking about championship from Florida is earlier this year, I was working this Clark Kent job, and one of our clients came in. Apparently he brought in an old binder. He used to work for championship wrestling from Florida back in the day. He was a manager called Mr. Marvelous. I was just like, small world, dude.
Yeah, I went to an event in Orlando, and I watched It was Harley Race and Ric Flair go for an hour.
Oof.
To a draw.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who else was on that card? Do you remember, Jim?
Barry Windham.
Ooh, I like Barry.
Mike Graham.
Kevin Sullivan?
Yes, Kevin Sullivan too. And that's about all I can remember off the top of my head. But that match between Race and Flair stuck in my head, you know, just an hour long.
Yeah, but that was back in the day when they were doing those like 2-3 times a week for like a couple of years, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's different when you watch it live. But, you know, it is, that's the way I felt it was.
No, absolutely. It's a different atmosphere. It's a different taste when you go see it live as opposed to TV.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and Dusty Rhodes was there too.
Okay. The Mac and Dream Daddy.
Now, when you watched that Flair Race Iron Man, did you just watch it, say, you know, hey, this match is pretty cool, or did you kind of know that was a special match between two soon to be icons in wrestling?
Well, I was pretty much a mark back then.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I was appreciating the match for what it was. And I knew Race was already an icon, and I knew Flair was getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But, you know, Harley Race was the NWA champion. Nobody could beat him, you know. And and Ric Flair didn't beat him that night. And it's like, damn, I wanted Ric Flair to win. Like, he's held the belt too long. Give it to somebody else. But that's back when people held the belt for more than 10 days at a time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It cheapens the belt when they keep changing hands too much.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Because I was just going to add in there, man, because you got to let it sit on somebody for a while. Because I mean, if they're not fighting for something, then what are they fighting for?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I was going to ask, can we talk a little bit about forming your character? I know we talked off air that you said, you know, there's a lot of similarities between the horror industry and pro wrestling. So can we talk a little bit about forming your character?
Sure. Absolutely. I probably won't shut up in this conversation. So make sure you got a drink and some popcorn. We're going to be sitting here for a while. You got to use the bathroom. Go do it now. So as far as like my character per se, because I know I've always been like an oddball in life, just grew up diagnosed ADHD. And as I got older, I learned to like kind of take it into imagination land and kind of let my brain drift off. And funny enough, with all the comic books, soaking up horror movies, you eventually kind of get into a mind place where you start to play tricks on yourself and the real life world. So where you kind of look at everything from a different kind of lens. And then as far as Mad Max Morrison, the Wild-Eyed Headbanger, the way I've developed him is he's very much a part of the man portraying him. But the thing about him that goes into character development is I've taken all the experiences through the whole journey and it's twisted him around a little bit. So the brain's a little out there in the sense of looking past the subtleties and kind of going deeper. And it really confuses people. Like when you really want to get into psychology things, you got to think about like mannerisms and facials. And it's like, what's going to freak somebody out? Like if I go stand up to him like this and just be like, just stare at him and tell him, be like, I'm going to eat your soul. And I believe it. I mean, what are you going to do? So it's little stuff like that where you just try to get into a different mindset. And I think that's really where character development gets fun and rich, is when you can kind of get yourself into a mindset. Once you got an idea of what kind of character you got and where you want to go with it, you kind of dive yourself into a mindset and forget who you are and become that character and embrace it, is when magic really truly happens. Like I know at my shows, luckily, since I started acting and playing different characters in movies, I feel like it helped me with my character development, my understanding of psychology, so that I can kind of drift in and out of different mindsets and kind of you know how they say you can, if you can turn it on, turn it off real fast, you're good. I feel like I get there where I could just kind of turn into Mad Max and shut them off whenever, and it's kind of freaks people out. But that's comes from things I've learned from watching horror movies, because that's where I get a lot of my ideas and psychology from. It's just from watching different kinds of horror movies. So I'll watch the different killers. I'll watch scenarios and even apply them to my matches to be like, how can we tell this story that can kind of freak people out? Try to build some suspense.
Do you have an example? Could you just give us an example from a match where you did something along those lines? Because I'm just curious how that works.
I know I'm currently like trying to build one right now. But one that I just recently did, we did a storyline because I work for a company out in Altoona, Pennsylvania called Eclipse Wrestling, where I'm just recently became their heavyweight champion. Well, before that, I was their legacy champion, which is like your mid-card title. Mm-hmm. And we ran a program between me and my manager and a group of characters called the Freak Show, which you have your ringleader who's got your oddball heel characters because they're outside the norm. Well, here I am, the white hot baby face, Stone Cold style. I look like a badass, but people are liking me. So I come in there and they try playing mind tricks on me. So the more the mind tricks happen, the slower and slower. It's like the more Max starts to turn a little bit until it gets to the point where he finds himself he has to tap into this place. He has to tap into this vicious place, you know, breaks the psyche to where I have to turn the tables and out freak them out, which we end up doing in a cage match where I end up terrifying their monster because they push me where they push you to that point. It's almost like the villain, it starts off where the villain will antagonize the victim. It's almost like I spit on your grave, where the antagonist antagonizes the victim, and then the victim dusts himself off, levels up, and then comes back to get over on the antagonizer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, if that works for you.
No, I get what you mean. Okay. The progression of the anger or hostility from the baby face. Got it.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just all about trying to tap into that brain space so you can tell this story so that you do have that payoff. Cause whichever direction you go, you want to be able to get into that mindset. So then the crowd understands. On top of that, you know, you're putting the pieces together and it's just like watching a movie.
Now, is that sold on your end through more mannerisms, I guess that's the word, or was it more promo work?
A lot of it for me was like in-ring storytelling with the mannerisms, facials. We did some promo work to sell it and lead it up to that point. But a lot of it, when we still had fans in place, because we have like our consistent fan base that shows up every month, so they're following it like a soap opera every month. They're coming back and following the story. And we did this for about 5-6 months telling the story. So each one that came back, we'd go in there and something would happen. And then we would go online and we did a lot of vignettes to sell the story, the plot holes in between. Mm-hmm. So rather than doing just straight up promos, we were shooting vignettes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you, when you were shooting those vignettes, did you kind of more or less produce it yourself because you knew what your character wanted to do and needed to do? Where is that, was that what you guys, is that how you guys handled it in Eclipse, is just kind of doing your own thing with your vignettes, or did you get any direction from the promoter or anything?
We totally had a direction from the promoter, but the promoter, he really encourages us to, you know, be creative on our own accord. If we have ideas, to explore them, of course, you know, we'll counsel and make sure that it all works and makes sense. Mm-hmm. But in this sense, a lot of us are very tech savvy in the world that we live in now. And because being a wrestler, you're also wearing a ton of other hats. So you're learning the editing, the producing, the photography, doing all this stuff. Like, Earlier this year, because of COVID, I started my own podcast and started doing video development for all my spots, and then started doing all my own promos and editing, all that stuff. And that's, we know how to do that stuff. We live in an age, we have the technology, we know how to do it. So yeah, we're producing our own promos and making it as cinematic as we can, just to get that juicy presentation.
Cool. Yeah. Just to keep with the wrestling and the horror theme. Cause like I said, I found you by chance. I was actually, something came across, I think it was on Facebook where I seen it. It was a crowdfunding for a new indie film coming out called The House That Eats Flesh.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was kind of researching that film and all that. And then I stumbled across, I think I saw a picture of you, and you had like a horror type background. And I was like, well, who's this dude? And then I looked and I was like, well, hell, he's a wrestler, you know? And then I was like, well, hell, he's in horror films. I was like, it was perfect. So that's when I reached out to you. But yeah, I mean, our philosophy is wrestling and horror and haunted attractions, haunted houses, all intertwined. There's a lot of similarities with all of those genres and all of those industries. And you have mentioned that you totally agree with that. So let's get you said you had a lot to say about that. Let's get your opinion and thoughts about how wrestling and horror and how they intertwine and the experience of you've had or you've seen with it.
I know I keep bringing it up, and I really feel so, is how wrestling and horror is like peanut butter and jelly, and how it's all nice and smooth and a, you know, big creamy sandwich. That's so delicious.
So succulent and delicious.
when you think about wrestling, you're thinking about like storytelling. You're thinking about how you want to captivate your audience. You're thinking about what they're going to be into, and you're thinking about what emotions you want to sell. What better way to captivate an audience than through a horror film, when you have antagonist, protagonist, you have your victims, you've got your motives, and you've got your different means of violence and how you're able to get in and out of different situations. And that you can totally translate that into pro wrestling as well. And that's why I think the way you do that is how they match so well together, because you can totally take any horror movie and break it down to its basic fundamental story progression. Like, you can storyboard the match, or you can storyboard a movie in like 7 or 8 panels and literally build a pro wrestling match to meet it and almost act it out verbatim. Like, you could take a Michael Myers, have him, what is it? Like, I guess like an example, it's like, imagine Michael Myers, he's coming out, he's the big bad heel. He's untouchable, unstoppable. He goes through, makes his presence known, and then you got your antagonist who comes in. You got your baby face who ain't quite there yet and keeps getting beat down, stock, beat down, until the antagonist starts leveling up and starting to get the strength, go for that comeback till he can come back at the big bad heel, Michael Myers. I mean, you can do this all day.
Yeah.
You could do this all day. You just take the basic story and can equate it to a wrestling match, and boom, you've got entertainment.
Mm-hmm. No. Okay. In your opinion, do you think the biggest crossover or intertwining is the entertainment aspect or the violence aspect? Or what do you think? Or, I mean, I'm sure it's a mixture of all of it, but what do you think is the biggest impact that appeases the crowd to like both?
I think for me, it's the storytelling and the entertainment. Because people want something to invest in. If it's not juicy, nobody's gonna give a shit. So it's something you gotta grab their attention. Athleticism and moves. I'm one of those people where I'll take storytelling over crazy moves any day. I like the work. When I watch wrestling, I like the working guys. So I feel like try to give the crowd the same. And I feel like the entertainment aspect is what keeps bringing people back, truthfully.
Very cool.
I think that's what keeps them locked in.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I've always leaned to. You know, the entertainment value is more important than the actual physical violence myself. I agree with you.
Yeah, because like all the moves, all that is that's just paint by numbers, man. That's just one way to get to the next story plot.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Agreed. Max, do you have a dream opponent? Like, if you could book yourself against anybody, who would you pick?
Oh, man, that's another loaded question, man. Do they have to be alive or dead?
Well, how about let's go with alive. We'll go alive.
I don't know, man. I got a ton of people I'd love to wrestle because I know I'm still young in my career. Luckily, I've had a chance to wrestle some people I watched growing up. I know a few years back, I was in a tag match against Gangrel and Kevin Thorne, and both those guys were awesome. So I chalked that off on my bucket list. I was a big Rhino Mark. I got the tag with him once. If I could wrestle with anybody alive right now, probably be everybody. I don't know, man. I don't have anybody in particular as far as, like, dream opponents.
You handled that very diplomatically. I like that. That was everybody. I like that. That was good.
You got to from time to time, man. I ain't gonna leave nobody out.
What about a legend that has passed? If there's any wrestler you could wrestle, regardless living or not, who do you think that would be?
If I could have a match with anybody living or not, I think it would be Chris Candido.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
For me, his selling has been like second to none ever. The dude is just pure magnetism. I've always enjoyed watching him in the ring. He's got a hell of offense, but he's also one of the biggest chicken shits and one of my favorites. So to work a match with him and to be able to work that kind of magic with him would make me very happy.
Cool.
I think my character and his selling would make for a very entertaining match.
Nice.
Well, let's switch gears and get more into the film industry part of it. See you're rocking your I Love 80s Horror hat. So who was your 80s horror, or who was your favorite horror character?
Man, I've got a long love affair with all of that. So what kind of got me started was, I think I was maybe like 5 or 6 years old. I started watching Tales from the Crypt on HBO. It was one of those deals where, of course, you know, I was a little tyke in the 80s. I was born in 84, so I think it was probably about late 80s. Every time mom fell asleep, I'd grab the remote, turn the volume down real low, have something on the other channel, and just turn on Tales from the Crypt till I saw some blood or some boobs, or I'd hear a snore from the couch. I'd be like, oh, change the channel. But I was a Tales from the Crypt mark. That got me started. And then from then, I watched a lot of the classics. I started watching the Friday the 13th. I started watching the Nightmare on Elm Street. I remember because they used to play on TV all the time. And that was how I spent my weekends, was every Friday, every Saturday night, from like 8 on until like 2, 3 in the morning. They were playing them on Sci-Fi. They were playing them on USA. They were playing them on TNT. And the big show I used to watch was Joe Bob Briggs and Monster Vision. So I'm watching all the classics. And on top of that, the first time I saw my first real bad horror movie, and I say bad as in, you know, whatever, you'll interpret it how you want. I saw Hellraiser for the first time when I was 7 years old. and that changed my life.
I bet it did.
Yeah, I would say so.
I would say that's the movie that poisoned the well for me, because that I was pretty deluded after that point and just started like trying to soak in more horror, trying to go further in, because I was watching guys like Pumpkinhead. Puppet Master was my shit. I was definitely into the toy stuff, except Chucky was the bane of my existence when I was a kid, man. I was just a lot of us, we all had the My Buddy dolls, man. So I was like, dude, this sucker's living in my house. Fuck this guy. Took a long time to get over and finally be able to sit through one of his movies, man. But he ended up becoming my favorite because it terrified me for so many years. So I got mad props for that.
Max, I'm gonna put Donnie on the spot here. You got to tell the story about the hurricane.
Yeah, our granddaughter lives with us, so we call her the Hurricane because she tears up any house in a matter of seconds. But my mom was a big Chucky fan, so I bought her a life-size Chucky doll. And she,
jealous.
Yeah, she passed away a few years back, so I got the Chucky doll back because my sister didn't want him. So he's up in my closet, and my granddaughter hates him. She don't like. She'll watch a little bit of his movie, but then she like it's like maybe 2 minutes, and then she's done. She's gone. So we basically, one day, just for a prank, we took Chucky and put him in a box, and we kind of folded him up. So when she opened up the lids of the box, his feet and his hair would fly out like and we wrapped him up in a Christmas gift. So she thought she was getting this big old gift. And, you know, she opened it up and opened up the lids and his feet and his hair, you know, flew out. And she saw what it was. And she like about shit her pants. she freaked out. But what the bad thing was is she was terrified for like 10 seconds. And then after that, she was loving it. She like picked it up and she was like holding it for a while. And then you know, she gave it back. She's like, all right, put him away. Get him out of here.
That's incredible.
But then, yeah, then just past July for her birthday, we repackaged him and wrapped him did it again. But I mean, we made it obvious. We bought like those gift bags where you get them at like the dollar store. And we literally taped the head, like put the tape around its neck so you could obviously see it was a doll. So all she did was like tear open the top of it and seen the red hair and she took off again. And so it's pretty comical. So he's a staple in the household, but she makes me keep him in the closet right now.
And you know, it was funny because last weekend I was up at Donnie's house. I brought him and his family some Christmas gifts. Mm-hmm. And the kid, Haley insisted on opening Donnie's package. What it was it's called a Geeky Tiki, and it's it's a tiki mug. Donnie's got it right there of Jason. She opened that up, saw that, and ran.
Oh no!
I'm like, well, you asked for it. You're the one that wanted to open it.
That's funny. I got a couple of ribs that me and my pals played with Chucky on some people because I used to have all three of the Bride series dolls that they used to have at Spencer's. I had all three of them and double tripled my money on eBay when I sold them.
Nice.
but I digress. So one night we had a bunch of me and my roommate, we both got lit, you know, lavish imagination. So we took the Chucky doll and put the knife in his hand. We took one of the kitchen knives, stuck in his hand, and stuck him in the closet, sitting on a perch. So when all the guests would come in and go put their coats away, he'd be greeting them with a smile. You know what I'm saying? Mm. So everybody would put their coats away. They'd look at Chuck like, ah, well, nothing. Well, one of his pals came over and brought their young son, and the kid went to go put his coat in the closet. He saw Chucky with the real knife and about shit a brick and almost ran to a door.
Nice.
It was too good. But yeah, speaking of Chucky, I'll go ahead and show off one of my toys right here.
There you go.
Yeah, I got one of them Mezco Chucky 3 guys. Yeah, I got a bunch of my toys sitting over here in my office and whatnot. I got a bunch in the basement. I got a bunch in the office. Because my affinity for 80s horror, I'll have to show you this guy. He's one of my prized possessions, but I got me a critter.
Oh, nice. Oh wow.
Handmade.
Wow.
Very cool.
That is sweet.
Yeah, gotta have him, man.
Yeah, so let's talk about your films and stuff and the stuff that you're into for a little bit. You mentioned Death Board. And that just came out a couple weeks ago, and you gave a little synopsis on that. What's some of the other things you got down the pipe? How much can you tell us about The House That Eats Flesh?
I can't really go into too much about The House That Eats Flesh. I can, I know it's supposed to start filming in September next year because it's supposed to take place around Thanksgiving. Uh-huh. And it's your typical synopsis where you got a group of kids that go out to a house in the middle of nowhere and run into some unruly's that don't really care for them to be there.
Right.
So it's like it's a throwback to old SOV horror. It's the stuff where you see the really cool cover and it's like Schrodinger's box. You throw it in the VCR. It's like, is it going to suck? Is it going to be rad? I don't know until I watch it. Because those were always fun, because it's always like a crapshoot, you know what I mean? But they're trying to do that. Yeah, but we're trying to do that. And what's really cool is they're using all practical effects. So we're definitely trying to get all the blood, trying to get all prosthetics, trying to make all the limbs, everything is just because that's the magic and charm of like indie production, man. It's like even the old conversation where they've talked for years about trying to remake Gremlins. Oh, let's do it with computers. Fuck that. There's no magic in computers. Right. I want to see that thing moving on the screen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But sadly, I do have to break some news right here because it literally happened like yesterday. But I am no longer tied to the House East Flesh. I just had to remove myself from that project for personal reasons. Nothing to really get into, no hard feelings, but definitely a project you want to watch because there's a lot of talented people on that cast. There's a lot of talented people behind the camera, and I'm really excited to see what they're going to do too.
Oh, very cool.
Do you have another project coming up soon, Max, or too early to tell?
No, I've actually got a couple down the pipe right now. I'm only going to say it's sitting in limbo because of COVID really put a delay on a lot of things. It really put a damper on a lot of different projects. Because I know I had a pretty full schedule this coming year, even with films, but we had put a pause on a lot of it. I got this other film that I've been working on since last year. It's a carnival. It's like a circus-themed horror anthology. It's called Shriek Show. And it's by Fuzzy Monkey Films, the same producer, same director that did Death Board. And that's going to be a lot of fun because we got some big names in that one too. We got Tuesday Night. I don't know if that name rings a bell to you. We got Tuesday Night. I think she was in one of the Nightmare on Elm Streets. We got
she was. That's why that name sounds familiar.
Yeah, we got Beverly Randolph, who I think was in Return of the Living Dead. And we've got we got another high profile screen queen that's going to be in there. We got Julie Prescott, who's in a bunch of indie movies. She's amazing. I've worked with her on a short film. That was another thing. I've been doing a lot of short film pieces over the last year because there's anthologies just happen to be the thing. So I get phone calls come in. It's like, hey, we got this short part. I think I've done like three or four of those this year that they'll know, but they're going to go on compilation pieces and different anthologies. I've got a movie right now I'm also working on with my pal Jimmy Flame. He was a wrestler. He's been around for like the last 20, 25 years. Rock. He's just like me. He's a ex-rock. He's a rocker. He's a wrestler, movie guy. One of the smartest motherfuckers on the face of the planet. We're working on this 80s cheese action movie called Chuck Blade.
Chuck Blade.
And we've got a proof of concept trailer for it already, and I'll send that to you guys. It's lots of fun. It's like all the old action heavyweights from the 80s meets like all the kung fu flicks.
Nice.
So, nice. So we're having fun with that. That's all indie. It's all practical. We got a cool story. Just waiting to get that one filmed. I'm also tied to a couple of the more projects with Brad Twigg coming up this next year. There was a movie called Wrestle Massacre he did a couple years ago where he had literally – all these wrestlers in this movie. It was a killer wrestler. It was the Cuban assassin. And he got pissed off and was like, I'm tired of being treated like shit. So all y'all are going to die. Feel my wrath. And that was the synopsis in the movie. Mm-hmm. So they're supposed to be doing a follow-up of that. And I'm tied to it. I've got a very prominent role that I can't divulge too much, but I'm really excited about it.
Very cool. Yeah, I've actually seen that one.
Oh, have you? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I thought it was fun.
That was a fun one. That's the cool thing I love about Brad Twigg movies, man. It's just they're so schlocky, but they're so much fun. But that's what I got going on right now. Just a bunch of shorts. I got Shriek Show. I got that. And then anybody that wants to hit me up, I've got copies of Death Board on DVD and I got it on Blu-ray and I can sign it and send it to you. I'll have info. So just shoot me a message. I can get it to you or I can tell you where else you can order it. you don't want to get it from me, be a jabroni.
I was just saying, where else would we buy it? I mean, come on.
I'll find and give you the link for it. But Brad Twigg has a he's got a website and an online store for all his DVDs, all his movies as well. So we got to support the film. We got to support the filmmakers. It's just as important for him as it is for us.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So do you want to plug website and social media where folks can get their hands on Death Board?
Absolutely. As far as Brad's link, I'll get it to you guys so we can totally, pimp that out later. As far as me, where you can find me at my website, www.madmaxmorrison.com, 2 D's, 2 X's, 2 R's, super important, because otherwise it'll take you to a gay porn burlesque star. You don't want that.
Trust me, that's very important.
Trust me, I made that mistake in the beginning. I was like, who the hell is that? Ain't me.
Why am I dressed in fishnet? Wait, that's not me. Never mind.
It's like, dude, did I dream this gimmick or what? You can find me all over social media. I got Facebook. I got my public figure page where you can go follow me along, or you can find me on, just your people page, Max Morrison, 2 X's, 2 R's. You can find me on Instagram. I just changed my handle today to Wild Eyed Headbanger. That's my moniker. You can find me on TikTok now. Started that this morning, having a lot of fun with it. You can find me there at Wild Eyed Headbanger. And if you guys want to make contributions to help the Wild Eyed Headbanger make more content, my Cash App is Mad Max Morrison, 2 D's, 2 X's, 2 R's. Super important. Sorry, had to get that in there.
I just wonder how many people's going to type in Mad Max Morrison, superimportant.com.
It's like Tim and Eric, great job. And right now I'm trying to fill my calendar for next year. So anybody's looking to book the Mad One, give me a shout. I got resume, I got matches, I've got references. So give me a holler.
Excellent. Donnie, this ought to be a unique question for him, but you haven't done the question yet.
So. Yeah, we'll get to that right now. We have a question we ask every person that comes on the podcast, and we've gotten some very unique answers, and we still haven't gotten the same answer from two different people yet. Right. And so this should be right up your alley, obviously. So we're going to put you on the spot. So, but you are the main killer in your own horror film. What is your go-to kill?
My go-to kill? I am a headbutter, so I will probably do everything I can to headbutt people to oblivion. I will find different ways to use my head as a weapon.
There you go. See, another unique one.
Crack some skulls.
Yep, smash your face in with a headbutt.
They don't call me the wild-eyed headbanger for nothing.
Wow, this has been a great show, and I would love to do a follow-up show with you, Max, because, I mean, very entertaining. And with you being wrestling horror, it works, and we need more of that in this industry.
Mm-hmm. I certainly appreciate that, and I'd love to come back. This has been seriously, probably one of the most fun ones I've had in a while.
All right, there you go.
Absolutely.
So with that being said, don't forget to follow us on all the social media at WrestleHorror. Don't forget our WrestleHorror video channel on YouTube, which I have to update, but there's still some content there. Don't forget to check out Mad Max's stuff. It is 2 D's, 2 X's, 2 R's.
Super
important.
See, we done made out a thing for the show now, ain't we?
That's gimmick infringement.
On behalf of my co-hosts, Donnie Hoover and John Orlando, I am Meat Hook Jim with Wrestle Horror. We'll catch you on the next episode. Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets. Facebook.com/WrestleHorror, Instagram @WrestleHorror, Twitter @WrestleHorror, on YouTube at the Wrestle Horror Channel. And you can also find us on our website, www.wrestlehorror.com.